Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlotnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome back Travis Watts. Hi, Travis.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me back on the show.
Thanks for coming on the show. Travis is a director of investor development at Ashcroft Capital, and he is a distinguished gentleman. So let's talk a little bit about Travis' personal, just a couple of words about what's new in your life, and then we'll jump back into multifamily real estate and what's going on out there. We're recording it mid-March 2024. It's a wild west what's happening out there. So let's, but first, what's new in the world of Travis?
All right. Happy to dive in. So yeah, I think last time we spoke, I had just become a father. So I just had our son, our firstborn. He's now 2 years old. So running around with him, spending a little more time with him. And yeah, man, a lot's changed in the industry with interest rates and kind of a buy the dip opportunity right now. And that's what we've been doing. Less deal flow. It kind of took a little bit of a downshift over the last couple of years, taking it easy. But yeah, still investing full time as an investor and happy to add what value I can to your audience.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, it's great. Time flies. 2 years. I mean, the life moves too fast. And you measure the age, but the age of your kids. You're younger than me, way younger. But I can tell you, I kind of think about this, how old I am by the age of the kids. I remember when I got married, so
yeah,
I had a kid right away. So
great.
All right, so let's dive into multifamily real estate. Transaction volume is way down. Things are not selling, and things are not buying. In other words, you need meeting of the mind for things to transact. So obviously the volume is down for all these plans to exit, they're all stalled. Valuations have softened quite a bit. What are you seeing on the valuations front? We'll talk about various things, but different markets, do you have any kind of thoughts or at least the data that you're seeing out there? What's happening on the multifamily valuations?
Yeah, I think that, you know, first and foremost, when it comes to multifamily apartments, which is what I primarily invest in and what we do at Ashcroft Capital, the fundamentals are still robust. The demand is still there for renters. We're still millions of units behind as a country for affordable places to live. So that's not really the issue right now. The issue is twofold. We've got interest rates that are much higher than they were a few years ago, which puts downward pressure on pricing. And then we have a supply issue, right? So this is going to be a year where all this new supply starts to hit the market, mostly in the highest growth markets that were the outperformers in years past. And so those are going to have to get filled up. And so that might cause, you know, some vacancy issues and some concessions and some stagnating rent, which is what we're basically seeing. In fact, according to Yardi Matrix, one of the biggest national databases for this information, the rents on multifamily nationwide have been relatively flat up until, you know, the point that the Fed stepped in and started to raise rates. But in reality, what's happening with rents is we're just returning to normal. Okay, so if you look at the long-term average of rent growth, asking rents nationwide, it's somewhere around 2.9% a year. And so that was the case from 2015 when I started investing in this asset class and when Ashcroft first became a company, all the way up until the onset of the pandemic. It was about a 3, 4, sometimes 5% growth, and that was what was happening. We saw a dip during the onset of the pandemic, which is when we first connected. And then we saw a rapid and extremely strong rebound where we were getting, in most US markets, major markets, double digit rent growth, specifically in 2021. And as you remember, that's when all the markets were going up. The stock market was going up, real estate was going up, stimulus money was being thrown around, the whole country was reopening. It was a bunch of pent up demand. And now it's just been a return to normal from 22 here until, you know, mid 23 to early 24. Rents are just basically flatlining and adjusting to that. So the forecast this year, depending on the source you look, is going to be 2% and 3% rent growth again, you know? So that's not, a lot of people might see that if you're newer to the space as, you know, underperforming the past, but in reality, it's just normal, you know? So once the supply gets absorbed, developers have really pulled out for the most part and will continue to do so as long as rates are high. And it takes 2, 3, 4 years to develop, you know, new multifamily products. So where does this put us on deals we're buying today in 3, 4, 5 years? It puts us back in a supply-demand imbalance, which is going to be very bullish for selling deals that you're getting into today. So to your point, Mike, I think the biggest pain point right now is, can you find a deal that pencils? Can you find a seller that says, okay, I'll discount the property 25% relative to previous pricing in 2021, because that's the reality of it. If you can get deals like that, which we've been able to do three in the last 12 months, then it's a perfect opportunity to buy the dip. That's my take on it. So I'm doing less deals just solely based on there's less deals to be had, paying a lot of attention to debt structuring, of course. And I like, you know, fixed rate debt for a 5-year term and stuff like that. So you're not so dependent on the debacle right now, which is so many people that had adjustable rates having to go from a 3% loan to a 6% loan, some cases even more. Everyone's trying to shuffle around, talk to their lenders, see if they can refinance, see if they can sell, if there's any equity in it, or see if mostly they can just hold on, because we're in the midst of a market shift. I mean, that's just simple as that. And so the good news about a market shift is they tend to not last nearly as long as a bull run. So the saying, you know, the bull takes the stairs and the bear jumps out the window, means that it takes a long time to build up and a short amount of time to come down. So I don't know, we can only look at the past as indicators and clues. But, you know, a lot of people forget that if we use the stock market, for example, we were really, the market had kind of bottomed by 2002 on the S&P. We'll just use that as a metric. By 2007 and early 2008, you know, we had had a full recovery, and then we had another downturn. But by 2009, late 2009, we started the recovery again. And we've been in really a recovery ever since, with the minor blips of the pandemic and the interest rate reset and all that. But market's hitting all-time highs again. So the point is, downturns are usually short-lived. And we've already been in one now for, what, a year and a half? So hopefully we're turning the corner at this point, and demand starts to come back once the supply gets absorbed up. So that's kind of my viewpoint in a quick nutshell.
Well, there was a lot of information to unpack here. So I heard a few things. One thing I heard, lots of new supply in hot markets, which I assume, what, Phoenix's, Atlanta's, Austin's, Houston's, where the markets were doing really well. And these are the markets that actually corrected the most from the peak.
Those markets, in addition to just Sunbelt markets in general, you could throw Orlando in there, you could throw Dallas in there. You know, these markets, Tampa was a good example. We had bought in Tampa before the pandemic, and we were getting like 12 to 20% rent bumps, you know, year over year for a couple of years.
The peak years, yeah. It was double digit for a year or two, not even 2 years, but there were a couple of years that felt super, super hot. One thing you said, and I really like this, this is the most fundamental thing for people to understand, is that multifamily real estate is fundamentally solid asset class. It's not office. It didn't get damaged as a result of pandemic. As a fundamental investment class, what got hurt is the financial element of the business, with the cost of money going through the roof and really fast. The Fed has never done this. They've usually dropped the rates fast when there's a problem, and they've hiked slowly. This time they hiked super fast, and way too much. So if you think about that's dislocated the market. And of course, supply demand needs to catch up. It takes time. Even if demand was super strong in steady markets, it 3% a year, 4% a year. Even if you had a year of 10%, you still can't catch up to the cost of money that just doubled, in some cases more than doubled, in a very short amount of time. So from that perspective, yeah, so let's continue the conversation. Now let's talk about recovery. So we've certainly seen significant correction in valuations. We've seen financial pressures on projects simply coming from multifamily operates, especially a lot of projects were acquired as value add, right? Value adds just they were on a floating rate debt. You couldn't get a value add, or it wasn't common to get a value add, to say the least, with fixed rate debt.
Correct.
So today is the reverse. The crazy part when people tell me, well, I want to lock in 5-year fixed. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but today taking a floating rate debt is not necessarily the worst thing because the rates have most likely nowhere to go but down. It's the reverse. In the past, they had no place to go but up, but today they have no place but to go down. Fed announced they're going to cut. We just don't know when and how fast. It's probably going to be slow. But it's a down direction. So recovery should be coming soon. So people are fearful. Be fearful when others are greedy, and be greedy when others are fearful, for Warren Buffett. So now is the time to be actually greedy, to be looking for deals, to be writing checks if you can get something deep discount, right? So what are your thoughts on the recovery? It might take a little bit of time. Obviously, Fed action will influence quite a bit what's going to happen. But with the current high interest rates, you got to get deep enough discount. Otherwise, the numbers don't pencil too well, right?
And I completely agree with you. So I've always been a fan in general of fixed rate debt for reasons like this. And really that lesson came from, 2008 and 2009. This is kind of what led to so many people losing single family homes, as they got these low teaser rates for many years and they could afford their home, and all of a sudden they doubled their mortgage payments and they couldn't afford their homes, and so all these homes went in foreclosure. Now we're seeing something similar, or we just experienced something similar in the commercial space. Because to your point, I forget the exact stats on this, but it was a huge amount. It was the vast majority of people buying commercial were using floating rate debt, because it had made sense for years and years and years. Oftentimes you could get a more competitive yield, you could have lower prepayment penalties, you could have more flexibilities on refinancing. There was a lot of cases to be made. Here's what caught a lot of people off guard. If you had floating rate, it's usually prudent to buy a rate cap, like an insurance policy, in case rates go up. What nobody could know is how much those rate caps would cost when you had to rebuy one, because they're usually 1, 2, maybe 3 years at most. And what we saw is we would pay, let's use some simple math. We'd pay $100,000 for a rate cap in 2019, and today it's $1.1 million. So where does the money come from when you have to repurchase it, right? If your deal is not stabilized and able to take on double the debt, basically, which most deals aren't, you have to, refinance, buy a rate cap, or force a sale. And with values down, it can be really hard to sell. And with rate caps being in the millions per property, that's just an average number that we've seen. But you might have to do a capital call. You might have to pause distributions. There's different things that you can do to remedy this. And I know that stuff sounds really scary, but I think as an investor, we have to know and expect market cycles to happen and rates to go up and down over time. And so we just have to be more aware in our underwriting and due diligence on what deal we're getting in and what's been happening historically and what's forecasted to happen in the future, to your point, with rates coming down, and just make the best decisions there. And the way I look at a capital call, if it does occur to anybody listening, is kind of like, imagine, let's take a different scenario. It's not called a capital call in this instance, but it's the same type of concept. You buy a home to live in. It's your own house, okay? $500,000 home, 20% down. That's a $100,000 investment that you just made. 3 years into living in that home, you realize you need a new roof, and it's going to cost $20,000 to replace the roof. Well, maybe you didn't budget for that. Maybe you didn't really think about that or count on that, but you need to come out of pocket now with $20,000 more to add to that investment. But the way I look at it is, it's not just a loss. It's not like, oh, here's 20 grand, let's go flush it down the toilet, it's gone, that sucks. It's, I'm going to continue improving this property. Some of that value is going to be retained in it. And we're just going to get through this period and, you know, invest longer term into hopefully a better market where valuations come back up and you can recoup that reinvestment. So it's a pretty common thing that's happening, but I wouldn't be too scared of it. I would just learn from that. If you weren't aware that that could happen, it absolutely can happen. And it is happening. So that's where we are.
I appreciate you bringing it up. This is actually, we're now diving into a little bit of existing deals and the experience of both sponsors and limited partners investors. So let's talk a little bit more about this, right? So capital calls, they've been happening left and right for the reasons, the uses of the money, just like you said, to buy a fresh rate cap, which is significantly higher than in the past because the rates have gone up so much. It's a large lump sum required, like our new roof or something large. It's inexpensive, right? Two, if you're on a floating rate debt, you may be bleeding because the rate, even if you hit the rate cap, if the property is not operating perfectly, if some delays in construction, leasing, whatnot, you may be bleeding cash. So you might need the cash for rate cap. You might need the cash for operating cash flow. You might need the cash for some renovations during the tough economic times. Some folks have taken renovation dollars and kept paying the mortgage, right? So there are certainly legitimate needs of the property. And what I've seen, and tell me what you're seeing. When these capital calls come out, I've heard industry standard that only about a third of people write a check. Two-thirds, or in terms of dollars, two-thirds just don't do it for whatever reason. They're unable, unwilling. And what happens then? We've seen an alternative approach, and I'll bring it up. I don't know how much of this you've seen in your business. So capital calls are super tough, especially when it's difficult to establish. How do you recover the money? What's the future value? All kinds of uncertainty becomes, and not only that, that new money feels like good money after bad. The alternative to that, we've talked about this quite a bit, is for the sponsor to come in and structure the new money as mass financing. Basically, money that comes in ahead of the previously invested money, sort of pushes common equity back. If there was a preferred equity, pushes that back, comes in between new senior preferred equity or new mezz financing. And that money now is in a much better place on a capital stack. And at least if internal investors don't participate, you can go to external investors and go ask new folks to take a part in that mezz round. Mm-hmm. And from that perspective, at least it feels way safer and gets investors stronger returns. So I'm just comparing and contrasting because I haven't seen lots of successes with capital calls. In fact, most of the capital calls I see, they fail. They don't necessarily fail completely, but they fail. They can't raise half the money, two-thirds of the money. And at that point, the sponsor is required to go back and go with the mezz round, but it's not fair to people who just wired the money on the capital call. Right. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so we're seeing kind of both sides of that. Some groups doing capital calls, to your point. Usually, I went through one years ago with a different operator, and it was kind of, it was more like a 50% participation rate, but still definitely not 100%.
It's not enough.
Yeah, no, it's not, quite frankly. So mezz debt, pref equity, you know, some people calling it rescue capital, whatever you want to call it.
Recovery capital, you know, that's a better term.
Yeah, equity that comes in on top of the pre-existing investors. The pros and cons. One, you get 100% of the money that you need. So that's an obvious pro. A con, it can depend, right? It can depend on how the new forward-looking projections pan out once you put the pref equity into play versus doing a capital call in the first place. I've also seen a group here recently, someone shared this deal with me. They're trying to do like a hybrid. So it's kind of like giving their investors an option. You can either do a capital call and it's going to be this much, or you can take a pref equity piece on top of your existing shares, not have to come out of pocket $1, but then your returns are going to be this. And so at least investors get the chance to decide. But in either case, you know, what everyone's trying to do is there's been a saying now for almost about 2 years, survived to 25. It's kind of been known that when the Fed does this, it's not a quick turnaround, right? They don't just raise rates and cut rates right back down. Like, this is a long-winded process, and real estate's very slow moving. So we're just starting to see the repercussions play out right now. And the expectation and the forward-looking projections is not only for rates to come back down, but for the general economy to improve for many different reasons in the near future. You know, again, knowing that downturns happen, but that they're usually short-lived, usually, you know, 2 years, maybe 3 years, and then you start the recovery phase again. So it's just, you know, psychology is what we're battling. You know, this conversation's great between you and I, and we can understand the pros and cons of these intricacies, but the reality is a lot of limited partners are not real estate versed people. They're doctors, they're dentists, they're engineers, they're business owners. And so that general psychology of, oh my gosh, my distributions just got paused. I'm done investing. I'm not doing anything. And I'm just going to wait and see what happens. And I think that's a big mistake, because, you know, every time any market of any type is correcting like this and then set to recover, that's your best time to accumulate. But all the sponsors I've been talking to over the last year are raising roughly 50% of what they raised in previous years. And it's just because the investor sentiment is not there. And a lot of that has to do with the lack of education out there. And so that's what I've been really working on this year, especially, is doing informative webinars where I pull data from RealPage and the Census Bureau and CoStar and CBRE and Marcus and Millichap. And I'm putting it all together in these presentations to articulate what's actually happening, not the fear-based headline news, but what's really happening and where we are right now and where we're projected to be. And just to paint the picture that it's buy the dip opportunity, and it really is. And, you know, I take that advice. I'm still investing just like I did in years prior. I'm just a little more bullish now than I was in, say, 2021. Because frankly, I got a little skeptical in 2021. Like, here's something to think about. If rents went up, I'm just going to use simple numbers. If rents went up in 21 by 10%, what you always have to think about is that wages matter at the end of the day, right? You're renting to people and you're basing the rent off of their income. So if the average American is getting a 4% raise per year and you're raising your rents at 10%, that's not sustainable. That's not healthy. You know, if you did a decade of that, no one would be able to afford any kind of housing. So when you see a year like that, it would be prudent to expect that rents are going to be much lower, or not as aggressive, I should say, in the years to follow, so that it can normalize. Same thing happened in the stock market, right? 30 whatever percent in 2021 on the S&P, and then down like, what, 22% or something like that the very next year. Things have to normalize. The stock market's just much more fast moving compared to real estate.
Yeah, thank you, Travis, for that. I want to kind of dissect this a little bit. There's a few interesting points here. So number one, the term is reversion to the mean. I think that's the formal term. So when you have something like rents outpace the mean over many years, at some point they got to revert to the mean. Yes. So, and the same thing happens with the returns in real estate. So we're experiencing this massive dip correction as a reversion to the mean, and it's not necessarily fun. Second point, I agree with you 100% that many LPs are wonderful folks. They are professionals, very well educated, super smart people, but they're not professionals. They're doctors, dentists, lawyers, technology people, but they're not professionals. And the difficult
not real part, estate professionals,
not
yeah,
real estate professionals. Yeah. So I'm sorry, that's exactly.
Yeah.
So they're not used to this. And one of the most difficult things that folks don't do, and this is a mistake that happens over time, people diversify. They may choose to break their money between multiple sponsors, operators, strategies around the country, et cetera, et cetera. But they forget to diversify in time. Diversification in time is also an important element. So the experience of the last couple of years has been very tough. If you've written those checks, you've written especially big checks into a tough market, you're not feeling good. And when you get a couple of scars, of course, it's very difficult to get away. And so hell with that, real estate, all this passive investing in real estate is painful. But it's the time, exactly what you said, to come in when the markets are down and participate in recovery. This is when the biggest returns, kind of generational investment opportunities, happen. And most people, because of the emotional state that they're experiencing, are taking the opposite approach. So I think that point is very well taken. I happen to agree. And our job is to educate and to obviously give folks an opportunity to understand that investing in the peak of the market doesn't feel great now when we have corrected, and coming into recovery, it's scary, but that's the best time to invest in general. And one more point, I just wanted to kind of see if if we all agree or disagree. So you said the economy is doing well, and we're going to go into recovery. I happen to have a little different opinion. I think the general economy needs a long overdue for a real recession. So a real recession is due. And again, I don't know where things are going to go, but without real recession, the inflation is too sticky. Fed can't really cut rates too much. So we might continue to experience fairly robust economy. I don't know. But what I do think is that there's been a severe recession in commercial real estate due to the interest rate changes, and almost no recession in the real economy chugging along, because employment is full, people are working, but the fundamentals are weakening. Credit card balances are up. These high interest rates causing all kinds of problems, which are not yet surfacing. It's taking a long time for these high rates to put the economy into formal recession. But the rates are highly restrictive. And sooner or later, if the Fed doesn't start cutting, and Fed doesn't do preventive medicine, they deal with problems when they happen, right? With these high interest rates, the economy is inevitably going to go into recession. This is my view. I may be wrong. Are you thinking differently?
Yeah, you bring up some great points. And here's my, just to clarify to your audience and to you, this is my viewpoint on it. Yes, we're overdue for sure, statistically speaking, for a real recession in the economy. Here's the thing though. From 2000, I don't even know, 10 maybe or 9 when I first started investing, I was following some of these bearish gurus, and every single year it's the market's going to crash, the market's going to crash, the market's going to crash every single year. And then every time the market did crash, as we've seen with the pandemic and 2008 and 9, stimulus money comes out and the Fed cuts rates. And so I guess my point of view when I'm speaking about the economy is more so the real estate economy, because that's just the world that I live in. So if we're talking real estate, specifically commercial, and rates get cut because we're in a recession and stimulus money comes out in any way, shape, or form, which is devaluing the dollar and increasing and boosting prices, this is actually kind of one of the best case scenarios. There's still going to be challenges, of course, with a recession, depending on layoffs and unemployment and if tenants can pay their rent and that kind of stuff. I get that. But as far as the valuations of things, and the health of the commercial space, I think it would be a big bullish thing. So I don't know, man. It's an election year, and a lot of weird stuff happens in election years. So that's kind of a wild card. Stimulus is always the wild card, because I think a lot of these gurus that I was referring to were actually correct. But what they didn't know and couldn't know is what the Fed and the government's going to do if and when we do get the falling out. And so
Oh,
in
we do
recent
know that.
history,
We do know that. It's called tolerance for pain is super low, but you got to get the pain. That everything you said makes sense, but without the pain, the government is in the spending sport. Politicians love spend money, but they need to have problems in the system. They need to have politically supported arguments where they got to go spend. So when the economy is chugging along, that they ain't going to be stimulus in a manner of speaking, and the Fed is going to cut very slow. So that's my point. Until we see a real technical recession in the economy, negative quarters of GDP, high unemployment, all that stuff that you mentioned is not going to happen. So I'm bifurcating the experience of general economy versus us real estate investors. We want to see that, but in order for that to happen, the system has to have problems. There has to be breakages in the system and pain. Otherwise, we're going to be dealing with the elevated inflation when the economy is chugging along. and elevated interest rates, and the recovery in real estate feels like it's going to be way slow until and unless things break in the general economy. That's my two cents.
Or the real estate space. I think you're exactly right. You know, the market has been overly optimistic with the Fed pricing in these cuts. I mean, even there was a lot of economists saying they were going to cut in 23, and then they'll cut at the very beginning of 24, and then they'll cut in March, you know. But so far they're not. And so to your point, yeah, I think if they do in the somewhat near future, let's say in the next 3 months, it'll be like a quarter point, which frankly is not going to save the ship on anybody or anything. You're really not going to feel any difference. And then maybe a few more months and another 25 basis
Too
point or something like
slow.
that. Yeah. So this could roll well into 25 or even 26 if we don't experience the pain that you alluded to. I agree with that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. It's higher for longer. These terms are the most, that term, if you really think about it, explains what has happened. It's up fast and furious, and higher for longer is what's causing the problems. And the ease, it's exactly what I mentioned earlier. They're not in a hurry to ease because they don't do preventive medicine. This analogy, when you have a patient that is sort of getting sicker and sicker, but it's not really in the emergency room yet, the Fed is not motivated enough. I had a dinner last week, one of the smartest people in the country, and she's a frequent guest with Maria Bartiromo and a number of other TV programs. Just as brilliant as it gets. And she talked about this. Fed has no incentive to cut unless and until problems are serious and severe, banks are failing, real problems in the economy. They just don't, because if they're wrong, you know what happens? Inflation is out of control. That's why they're erring on the side of caution when they know things are broken, when they know inflation is coming down faster because things are broken, then they're going to act. So anyway, any parting thoughts? Again, this was a great conversation. Really enjoyed. And again, we haven't talked for 2 years. And before the meeting, we didn't have a long discussion. I just wanted to hear your point of view. And a lot of what you're saying is similar and consistent with what I'm thinking. We are in the period of upcoming recovery. Participation now in the recovery is the smart thing to do if you have the courage and the capital to put to work. But if you're sitting and experiencing past few years and you're thinking about it and the pain is severe, it's difficult to get some people to move. And it's kind of one of these challenging experiences. I continue to talk to investors who have come in and invested the last few years, and the experience is rough. And I'm sorry, this is the state of the matters. And I feel for everyone, and I've lost a lot of money too in this. But the dollars written in 21 and 22 are on thin ice. Some of those deals just not gonna do well. Some will do okay. Some might still survive and thrive, but it's a very different environment. And again, back to the some of the conferences we've been to. Last year I spoke with Jeremy Roll. You know Jeremy. He's been
Good
guest
friends.
multiple times on a podcast. You know what he told me? And we were chatting. He used this term, and it's a very simple term. And I was talking about diversification and time. He said, "I have a better term for this." I said, "What's the term?" The term is respect the cycle. The cycle was at the peak. So if you wrote a check into the peak, it's terrible. You didn't know it was a peak, but the cycle was at the peak. It was keep going up and up and up, and at some point it was going to come down. And he got very cautious even pre-COVID, and sort of that wisdom has paid off for him. He's experienced sitting in treasuries for a long time. Not as exciting, but at least he hasn't taken as much risk. And when the market corrected, he didn't have that painful experience. So it was an interesting conversation. Any final comments on how would folks get a hold of you?
Yeah, that's certainly, you know, a philosophy to consider. And I think Jeremy's more of the type of individual to try to time the market and, you know, whatever. He could have, you know, better insights than most on that or not. I look at a lot of the statistics on timing the market. And I know I've certainly tried in the past in different ways, whether we're talking real estate or stocks. And almost every time I was wrong, almost every time I was listening to financial gurus, they were wrong. So I subscribed to something different. I said, okay, I'm throwing in the towel on time in the market. I'm just going to accept that I can't do it. And that's just a personal thing. I'm not telling anyone this is for you. This is my philosophy. So I said, instead, I'm going to subscribe to dollar cost average. And so I did many deals for many years that were producing about a 20% annualized return as a limited partner. And then we got these recent years and the rate hikes and all this, where the assumption was those deals were going to perform the same. But the reality is, let's say they do half, you know, because they're not going to do nearly as good. So I get 10% returns for a couple years or a few even. And then we're at a place like today where I'm bullish again. And I think that maybe an 18 to 20% IRR is possible over the next 5 years. And so I'm looking at this as a 15 year chart. And what was my average return? And if you take some 20s and a few 10s and a few 20s, it's still a solid return. But to your point, Mike, it's unfortunate for anyone who started diving in 2021, just getting started and putting all their liquidity out there into the market. It's no different though than any other time. Again, to use the example of stocks, you know, you start investing in 2007 in the stock market and get gung-ho about financial freedom and retirement. And then 2 years later, you know, you're hurting pretty bad. But if you just kept holding and buying in, especially 08, 09, I mean, look at where the market is now. You know, it's probably tripled since then. So I'm a long-term investor, and I tend not to just sit it out because I know, you know, there's deals to be had in any market cycle. That's my personal opinion, but appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, thank you, Travis. I'll add one comment to this. So yeah, I wish investments in 21 and 22 will generate 10%. A lot of these investments, unfortunately, will wind up losing money. And yeah. I'm taking an extreme case while you're taking a very light case. It's unfortunate, but a lot of checks written 21, 22 because of the market corrections, especially then when the market sunbelt where valuations were high. So things have dropped from the peak 30, 35, 40%. These investments, because of the leverage of real estate, could be completely upside down. So what I'm referring to, yes, we have a lot of great years of 20% return, sometimes even higher. It's the experience. If you wrote significant check in the last few years, you may be heavily negative, depending on the deals, of course. So that your average, your blended average could feel terrible because of the last couple of years. But it should not discourage folks because of the big correction. In fact, it's a bigger opportunity now to come in. But the philosophy is correct. Dollar cost averaging or diversification in time works. It's been a proven, historically working both in stock market and real estate. But you got to be prepared for these significant swings. The crazy part about real estate on a really long-term basis, if the interest rates were just stable and everything works stable, you have 9 winners, 1 loser. When you compare this to technology, you have 9 losers, 1 winner. I'm talking about investing in those sectors. So real estate being 9 winners, 1 loser on a long-term basis is the way to survive and thrive and do well. The challenge is there are periods of time, 21, 22, and the Fed hiking is like a 150-year flood, rare occurrence. It doesn't happen often. When it happens, it creates a lot of challenges and problems. And we talked about this quite a bit. And no matter who you talk to the industry, this is the crazy part. Those folks who don't really understand what has transpired, they're sitting in their cocoon or vacuum. They just don't understand. But it's a massive flood, a tidal wave, a tsunami wave that hit us that was completely unprecedented. I have a separate video. I call it "The Fed is a Drug Dealer," and they accustomed all of us to ZIRP, zero interest rate policy, for too long. And ZIRP is a powerful drug. You withdraw the drug, we all feeling massive withdrawal. So anyway, how would folks get a hold of you in any environment?
In this environment specifically, you can visit ashcroftcapital.com/Travis, or you can connect with me on social. My handle is @passiveinvestortips, which is the podcast I run and the book I'm coming out with. And always happy to be a mentor or a resource for anybody listening.
Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for sharing. Awesome to have you on the podcast. Good luck participating in the recovery. Hope we all do really well.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.